single dollar that isn't being spent to help people with that mission is a failure to the American people. That money should not be going to build immigration detention centers. They should not be sending FEMA personnel, which they are doing, to help onboard new ICE agents.
We have to leave it there. Jeremy Edwards, former spokesperson for FEMA, among nearly 200 FEMA workers who signed a Katrina declaration to Congress. Thank you for joining us.
WRCD Pittsburgh.
You forgot to say who you are and with what band.
Yeah, I know. Hello, this is Reza from Le Vent du Nord. You're listening to WRCD Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCD Pittsburgh and its members.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP Brookville LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR Loudonville Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Mahwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
She took it, she took it. it back, I think that I will die.
88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. 89.5 Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. And 88.3 WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show. And today we are joined by Palesa Mosumi from the Art and Jazz Experience. Palesa, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Thank you so much, Richard. It's good to be here.
So this experience, Art and Jazz, is a pretty new thing, I would say. How, describe it for people who don't know much about it, especially those in the Cape Town area.
Wow. So Art and Jazz is a concept that we came up with. And when I mean we, it's really a group effort. We kind of came together as artists, curators, and really thought about the love that we have for jazz music in general, but also the improvisational element to this genre of music, as well as the artistic element that can, you know, take place in different ways. And one of the ways that we thought about jazz was through abstract art, through thinking about jazz and as an abstract form. And we thought about it also through the conceptual lens of how many artists have kind of collaborated with jazz musicians in the past in South Africa and also present day South Africa at the moment. And Art and Jazz burst into the space where we wanted to collaborate with jazz musicians and visual artists. So it is a space that welcomes people that love jazz and art simultaneously at the same time.
Sounds like very interesting stuff. There's a lot to get into there because you combine the visual and that sound of the jazz music. Talk about kind of how the idea for this whole process, this whole project rather, came along.
It came along with a friend of mine who approached me, who's a visual artist, who saw me as a curator to kind of bring a different element and a messaging around the space. And at the moment we are in a crossroads in terms of whether we want to create Art and Jazz as a bigger, better space for communities in Cape Town or create a intimate space for select few who would like to interact with jazz musicians. So that's where we are at the moment. Curatorially, we are really thinking through around what is happening in South Africa musically and visually, and that is something that motivates us daily. It's a one take one night type of experience. So people who come to Art and Jazz don't experience the same thing. They will never be able to experience the visual artist in a regular, you know, well, not never, but they will not be able to see the visual art that is presented at Art and Jazz all the time. So it's really selected, intentional, and it's something that is wondrous and brings about a sense of curiosity for those that come to Art and Jazz. So it's always about who's playing on the night. People anticipate coming to this show because it's really an experience. Sonically, it really plays to that sound, that history that we have in South Africa, as well as also the visual element, which is paired with the music.
Describe, because in the United States, there's a big history with jazz music, and it's in the culture. Even on this station, WRHU, there's a show called The Jazz Cafe. So in the jazz is a really big thing in the United States in the culture. Describe for those who might not be aware in the United States listening and in South Africa and Cape Town listening, the history and prominence of jazz in Cape Town.
It's really important to place jazz within the context of Cape Town because really we have sounds from Guma. We have, you know, legendary sounds from groups that came from Cape Town who merged the sound of jazz with different genres, but also were influenced by artists as well and also other genres of music. So there's a deep history of amalgamating these different sounds to bring a unique perspective and a unique political voice for people that are interested in the history of South Africa. We can remember the kind of ways that which art played a role in mobilizing people to understand what was happening in apartheid and also what was happening now in the world globally. So at the forefront of everything that we do at Art and Jazz is to really bring about the historical narrative as well as also bringing an element of people being aware of the role that an artist plays within society. And we don't do it in a way that is overtly political, but our stance is quite strong in terms of how we want people to understand the genre of jazz. So the musicians that we also collaborate with, because it's a collaborative effort, are those kinds of musicians who understand the history of South Africa, the history of Cape Town, the history of jazz music, and the links that we have with the United States, specifically turning into our recent art and jazz event. We really had a series of prints by an artist called Sam Ntlengetwa, and he's a legendary artist in the South African visual arts. And he has a series of prints that looked at jazz legends like Mahalia Jackson, you know, Ray Charles, Shea Baker. So he painted a picture around the kinds of musicians that come from the US and had also a Miriam Makeba, you know, in there to also bring it back home. So even when Gabi Mutuba was performing on stage, there were these artworks that spoke to the history of jazz musicianship and also the legends that came before people like Gabi Mutuba and all the other amazing young artists in the jazz music genre.
You were saying about how you have the different paintings throughout the night, the different artwork. How does that kind of go hand in hand with the music that's being played? Are certain songs picked to match with the artwork? Is the artwork picked to match the music? How does that kind of work as a curator? And because you were also saying about you want a message about the role of art in our society, how do you kind of bring the two worlds together for something like this?
Well, I think it's important to also note that the two don't come in competition, so to speak. They are complementing each other. So visual art and jazz music complement each other very well in art and jazz. Art is specifically chosen according to the style of music that we incorporate in that show. So it could be, for instance, like I mentioned earlier with Gabi Mutuba, we were really looking at a specific sound that she presents and also paying homage to the jazz legends that came before her presence in the arts as well. So we pick musicians that understand the concept, number one, but also secondly, have a conversation with the artist beforehand to understand where they are in their own journey, in their own story, in their own trajectory. And we also pick musicians that we know have a locality and a following within that specific context. So in Cape Town, we do our research and we know that musicians specifically play in different spaces in Cape Town. And there are many amazing spaces for jazz and so many diverse audiences in Cape Town. So we understand that it's important for us to tap into those spaces and see what it is that we can offer that's different. And I think it's worked out really beautifully because seeing these two disciplines has created a different audience that comes to the show. It's created an intergenerational conversation. It's even brought people who are in theater who want to collaborate with us, who are thinking about how do we make this a more cohesive creative economy in South Africa. So I'm really excited about what's going to happen in the future. And building onto what you asked earlier on in terms of why is it that we are merging these two disciplines and the history of South Africa, I think it's important to also say that it's one of those ideas where what you see and what you hear is very complementary and intellectually stimulating at the same time.
You gave me a lot to work with there because because that was when you were showing me the pictures. I was wondering because it's something that kind of it's like it marries the two different worlds of sound with the music and the complementary with the artwork on the wall. And now you were saying about how you incorporate people into it. You have people from the world of theater that want to go into it. How do you kind of pick the messages you want to display and convey with these events and the artists that you want to bring them to life?
I think it's so apt you ask that question, because even in our previous conversations with people are always so enthused by the idea of art and also jazz, and also thinking through different ways of being. And when I say different ways of being, I mean in terms of being in community with one another. And I think that's really at the core of art and jazz, is the community of artists that we have engaged on different levels, and also artists that are so open to opening the door and the conversation around how do we make our creative economy better and sustainable. And I think that's the conversation at the core of art and jazz, is how do we make this work for everyone and make it even more healthy and conducive for those that are coming after us, artists that are wanting to open, you know, opportunities for themselves in the industry. So in our next iteration, we're thinking about how do we incorporate local artists to also collaborate with established bigger jazz musicians to bring them up into the industry. And that is an opportunity of a lifetime for a young artist or jazz vocalist to sing with another big jazz vocalist and think through the music with them. So I think at the core, the answer is really about the community that we've built. I know that people that have written about art and jazz have suggested people and thought about, hey, what about this person? Because they are really into what you're doing. And we take those considerations and we put them together and we think about it. And as a curator, I think for me, I've always put myself at the center of being someone who is consuming a jazz and understanding that jazz is really about a consciousness, and people that understand jazz music are really people that also understand, like I said, the abstract nature and also the conceptual nature of art and how it can really flow within a space and make a space different and also have a different mood. I think that's also kind of why we wanted art and jazz to merge together in one space, because it gives a different mood and a style, and people feel welcome in a space where they're able to identify art that resonates with who they are.
You used the term in that last answer that I was unfamiliar with, creative economy. How would you kind of define that for the world of the artists that you're working with? And what it means.
Oh, wow. the term, the creative economy, came about probably in the last, I would say between the last 10 years, where artists and obviously artists across the board, whether you're a musician or art, visual artist, theater maker, etc., poet, writer like myself, think about how to make the creative industries more vibrant and profitable, but also makes it possible for people to be employed by the industry and have sustainable careers. And I've never been one to believe that one has to die poor as an artist or as a curator or whatever, because I think that the creative industries is such an important industry in society and the world, that it pumps so much money into the economy. And hence, it is important for artists to also understand the business side of it and how it implicates so many people, to how it implicates so many industries to pour into the industry and also create so many jobs. And that's why the creative economy is so important in context to the world, because we need more artists to be employed, to have jobs, to have sustainability, to have sustainable careers. And that's why it's important. It's one of the things that I find is very important to my practice. And I always speak about the creative economy as a way to start a conversation around how do we make sure that we have people that have sustainable careers and we see them perform again and again.
I'll ask a question. It might be a bit of a heavy question here, but you had raised a good point that we're starting a conversation about a creative economy, creating sustainable lives for these artists and musicians, people in the arts, whatever have you. How do you think we put that into practice?
I think we put that into practice by really doing the work, by really saying, putting our money where our mouth is. I think a lot of the time, and I, as a writer, I've experienced so many stories of people telling me, you know, horrific things, and making art is quite an expensive exercise. And I think it's important to find ways to work with artists and create a sustainable business model. That's one of the core ways that one is able to sustain something like Art and Jazz. It takes a venue, it takes people coming to play, it takes musicians, sound engineers to come in and be there. And it takes also, you know, it takes a project manager like myself, a producer, to say, this is going to work or that's not going to work. And it takes a team to build it, and to build it with tenacity and also a different kind of mindset. And I think that's why a lot of us are in the industry for the passion and the love, but also we're there to put our money where our mouth is and really dig deep and make it happen. So that's really at the core of it. It's really to put our money where our mouth is and keep doing what we need to do to make sure that we bring the best experiences to communities across South Africa or even in Cape Town.
Well, you were talking just now about making it happen. Was this past event in August, was that the first Art and Jazz event? Was that the first one?
It was the second one. So the first one we had on the 1st of May, and it was a great launch. We had anticipated it was going to be a one-night immersive experience. But I think because of the way in which how successful and how people wanted us to produce another one, we then decided to have another one on the 7th of August.
Discuss putting that first one together. This could be long-winded. Putting the first one together and then how you used the takeaway from the local community, what people were saying about it, to do the second one. Describe that.
The first one was quite a jarring experience because we needed to create it within 4 weeks of really, you know, hard work. So 4 weeks is as anybody knows in the event space, 4 weeks is quite a short time to produce an event and to make sure that it's got enough people buy tickets. So we had to do a lot of marketing. And we're grateful that some of our community members were able to, you know, come through. And when I mean community, I mean people that we've known in the industry for a long time. And they, you know, also came through and supported us. But however, the question that came around the end of the night was, are you going to do another one? Is this going to be something that's regular? What's going to happen, you know, with the musicians, you know? All of these questions came after the show, and also just after, you know, our interviews with various media in South Africa. People kept thinking, like, is this going to be just one night only? Which we presented it as a one night only. However, after thinking through the whole experience, then it dawned. On me that, you know, it's important to also have another show to continue this legacy of Art and Jazz. So we'll see. I mean, it's one of those organic processes where it really is up to the community to say, I look forward to seeing you again, you know, and it's really a platform that is, as I said, not one of those jazz shows that take, you know, a week or two to produce. It really is an intentional curated experience. There are conversations with people in the background, musicians, artists that, you know, either want to be part of it or not. And there's a lot of administration that comes into play, which is very important for any show or event to take place.
I was curious about if, I know you were saying about themes and messages, does that kind of shift from one show to the other? Okay, we want to tackle this subject now in the work that we do. How does that shift?
It shifts with the musician, actually. So the previous one we had was Gabi Moduba featuring some of South Africa's best musicians, actually, in the country, Riza Kota and Tumi Mokhorosi. It actually shifted when we had our conversation with Gabi about what she'd like to play on the night. And that then the theme was jazz according to the feminine, because she has a plethora of music that really speaks to the sound that is very soft, but also firm and full of a lot of quality music, basically, you know. And I felt like it was a good time to come and celebrate that with her, because in South Africa in August, it's Women's Month. And, you know, the 7th of August was the Thursday, first Thursday in Cape Town. And we thought, what about having this concept of jazz according to the feminine? Because, you know, so many women have come through this jazz genre in South Africa, and we need to celebrate that. And I think that worked pretty well, because people felt connected to what she presented on the night. And the storytelling was so important, because she understood the assignment when it came to presenting work that she had produced in her previous albums, but also the collaborative nature of the platform, where having spoken to her for so many weeks, we came to that moment of presenting the live show, and the artworks and the way we presented the artworks spoke to the kind of music that she played on that evening. With the first one, we had a very good turnout, because we had an abstract art focus, where we had different artists that collaborated with each other on different pieces. And we had this amazing musician, Braherbi Twaedi, to speak to the artworks as well, and speak to the kind of music that he plays as well. So it's all very amalgamated within this idea of play, but also improvising, but also creating this mood and style of listening that is very much connected to our society and our history as South Africans. So I do think the next one is going to also be a continuation of what we have done with the second one. And I think that it's also going to continue with the legacy of what we're trying to build.
I'm going to ask, what was people that came to the events, community members, what was their feedback on the event? Oh, I liked this, I didn't like this. And how do you use that to build and go forward? Like you were saying, making it bigger. How do you use the feedback?
So some of the people that we had were amazing, from different diverse backgrounds, business people, entrepreneurs, artists themselves, writers, media. And most people come to the show not expecting the kind of work we put in. They come in and are surprised by the level of professional conduct and just the level of showmanship that we have in art and at Art and Jazz. And for now, we have had great feedback. People love our approach. We don't do a lot of talking. We just introduce the musicians and the artists, and we do make sure that people understand that this is a very, very much a space for people who love art and who love jazz, and that resonates with them a lot. Some of the reviews that have come through have always been about, I've never seen this person live. It was the first time and you did a great job. And I think those are the ones that come from young people who listen to these musicians. And when they see them live, it's almost as if it's a dream come true. And so those are the kinds of people that we really revel in terms of how we produce the show. It's with them in mind. It's thinking about how they will receive the music and how they receive the curated show and how they'll receive the entire space. And that's who we do the show for.
Now, with the topic of jazz according to the feminine, you've been involved in the project coordinator of That's What She Said for quite a bit of time in Cape Town. Describe for those who aren't aware what That's What She Said is and how that work kind of ties into what you're doing now with art and jazz.
That's a very good question. So That's What She Said is a research project. For those that don't know what it is, it's basically tying into the, like I said, the history of South African art and contemporary art specifically. It's a research project focused on the role of women in the arts and what their presence and presence means in context to the visual arts as well. So we put up these fundraising dinners to support young artists within the visual arts and create a space for them to be supported financially in terms of their careers. So one of the ways that we do that is that once a year we have a dinner where people buy tickets and we're able to fundraise an amount of money or funds towards their career. So that's what we do as That's What She Said. But with art and jazz, I think it ties in beautifully, because with jazz according to the feminine, it was really to say that there are women jazz vocalists who work so tirelessly in the industry, and we wanna shine a light on them through these jazz performances. And that's basically what it's all about. I think the two tie in together, because my work as a curator or independent curator is to really facilitate hard conversations and make people aware of the ways in which women have played a role in these various spaces and how they continue to play a role in these spaces. Despite all the challenges, we still continue to forge forward. And I think that's the essence of That's What She Said, is to really plant a seed around how women have been so important in the trajectory and progression of art.
I'll ask this now. Why do you feel that people, obviously the message is very important, but why do you feel still to this day people haven't been able to get in Cape Town and across the board the importance of women in the world of jazz and in art? What do you think it is there?
That's a very important question. I just came out of a conference last week for 2 days where I spoke about this very topic. And I think this is, you know, I'll keep it brief, but in the conference paper that I presented, it was also around the work that I do with That's What She Said and what research I kind of came across over the past couple of years. And is that the success of women in the arts is not really measured quantitatively, and one cannot be able to do that unless you understand the qualitative nature of the role of women in art. So meaning that you need to know the stories of these women before you can tap into the numbers of how many people have been impacted by women in the arts. We really need to start excavating the stories before we can talk about we've had 100 women or 300,000 women empowered in the visual arts. It has to start at base level of understanding what role, what has happened, what stories these women hold with themselves, with their own careers in all different spectrums. And I think that's important to my practice as a curator, is to really think about the stories of these women and what they have to say, with whether it's their art, whether it's their music, whether it's their writing. It's really about the story. And that's what it's about. It's really to understand the facts before you can get to the numbers.
Just because you're mentioning story, we were talking about storytelling before, and with the world of writing, how do you kind of use your experience as a writer to inform your work as a curator with these experiences, with That's What She Said in Art and Jazz?
As a writer, I've kind of committed a very long time ago to write about women, or even tell stories of women through my work. Primarily because I'm a follower and a reader of women, specifically Black women artists and also Black women musicians or vocalists. I'm forever reading about these women, and I find it very ironic that in 2025 we have to still think about, you know, the plight of women, and you know, we talk about it, but it, in reality, it's actually very different on the ground. And I think speaking to women in Cape Town, in Joburg, in South Africa, in Bloemfontein, where I come from, there hasn't really much that's changed. And I think my stance has always been that unless something really changes, it will show in the ways in which we treat women. And that's really at the core of why I do this work with That's What She Said in Art and Jazz, is that to really illustrate through my practice as a curator the ways in which we can have strategic methodologies in creating space for women's work, how we can navigate the space with intention, and how we can make this beautiful creative industry into a cohesive and inclusive one. And that's really at the center of why I do the work that I do. And as a writer, it's hugely informed me to be a curator, because I use my imagination to tap into what the ways in which I can make space seem as if it's a natural process, but also it's a very well thought out process at the same time.
So based on everything you were saying as a writer, do you have any stories that people have told you, specifically women, that have stuck with you as you've been curating these events?
So I think curating has always been fundamentally about just carefully looking at specific things and looking at it from a perspective of caring about a community, caring about objects, caring about spaces, and also caring about people in general. And I haven't really experienced a woman coming up to me telling me about specific stories about jazz specifically, but I've seen and witnessed women coming, you know, talking about their love for jazz and their love for art and their love for creativity. So those are the experiences that I've come across in my time as a curator and a writer. Specifically to my writing, have, you know, interviewed women and jazz artists specifically who sing and work in different countries outside of South Africa. It's always interesting when they speak about their experiences performing in different spaces across the world, how it has impacted their sense of belonging and their sense of identity as South African women, and how their experience outside of their home country has informed their own musical writing and musical expression. So those are the interesting topics that I've kind of engaged with women, specifically those that are in the jazz industry or in the music industry, in terms of my own experience as a writer. But as a curator, There are many stories I can share about women who have told me in confidence what their experiences have been engaging with at different spaces, individuals, and institutions. So those are things that I think are important to not say on a public platform like this one. But, it, you know, the sentiment has always been that nothing has really moved the needle forward in terms of our role. Nothing has really moved forward in terms of how we have been accepted or treated in that space, in these spaces. But fundamentally, at the end of it, it's always very comforting when I speak to them at the end to say, I will trudge on, I will forge on, because I am a woman and I'm an artist, and this is my role. This is what I'm supposed to do, which is to reflect the times. And I'm always very motivated and fascinated by that stance when I do talk to women. Yeah.
It sounds very powerful that the work that you're doing is inspiring these people to saying, I'm going to keep going, I'm not going to give, and I'm not going to back down. That's a very powerful message. How does that make you feel at the end of the day, hearing that with your work? It has to make you feel that you want to charge on too.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I'm privileged, you know, this is work that is, I'm also humbled at the same time. I think I have one of my closest allies who sent me a message and said, you know, checked in with me and asked me how I was doing in this work, because sometimes it can really be a lot for one person. And I really appreciate the community that I have surrounded myself with over the years. They have really stood the test of time and held my hand in any shape or form. They've been really there for me. And it's important to have those individuals who tell you that your work inspires me to continue and to do the work and to not be let down, you know. But also it also gives one a sense of purpose, because you're able to know that there's a community that is also wanting to make things happen with you. And that's very important and encouraging.
And that's what they say. I've heard it said that the admiration of your peers is the highest award or compliment that you could receive. And it appears that you're doing
absolutely.
That. I don't know if you would agree. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the highest compliment. I think the work always speaks for itself, and it should always speak for itself. And so I'm privileged and I'm humbled all the time. It's always a jarring at the beginning. Like Nelson Mandela says, you know, it's until it's done, you never really know how it feels. So I'm paraphrasing, because it's something that always rings in my mind when I think about all the work that needs to be done. But, you know, one has to do the work to see it happen in real time.
That's all true. And you've been doing the work. When did you want to start doing this work? When you were younger, what was the moment where you said, this is what I want to do, I want to help here? How did you come across that realization when you were younger?
I think I realized from an early age that I had a sense of curiosity. and I always wanted to play to that. It's my curiosity about certain things that has kept me going in the industry that I'm in. But also, I think I've always been a person who loves to learn and learn about anything and everything. So, you know, I think they say in music, you have to have a teachable spirit. And I think my parents and my family did a good job in making me a teachable individual. Someone who learns from other people and makes it even, their own purpose to make others feel like they can learn from them as well.
You mentioned something with this idea of a teachable spirit. You mentioned something before I want to go back to: people who understand jazz music. because you can hear it, but not doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as understanding and having this. Because a lot of your events, too, it appears you're trying to send out a message and a signal through the music and through the art and the teachable spirit. How do you think people can really understand the jazz music? What do you think it is in people?
Yeah, I think, you know, jazz is, the jazz genre has really, over the years, has really impacted a lot of people in different ways. And I think it's also been that one genre of music that has created an organic community. So anywhere in the world you step into a cafe and it's a jazz cafe, it's an automatic connection with that those people. And I've been to many jazz cafes around the world because this is one music that I think connects me to my own humanity and connects me to myself as a person. And I listen to jazz when I know that I want to have a deep dive into my own life. And it's very reflective for many people. And I think that's what the message is around, is like this consciousness around creating space for people to deep dive and reflect on the times and reflect on who they are and reflect on what is important to them. Yeah, I mean, at the end of it all, I think we're all trying to create a sense of purpose when we listen to music, and some people can, you know, go to a concert and get so energized by the music and go off and do some creative work or start feeling like they're able to conquer the world. And I think with anything, with any kind of show or putting together a curated experience, it's always having to push through certain boundaries without making people excluded. I think that's one of the things that you pointed out, is that I often want people to feel included, but also to make them feel like they're learning something in the process. So having that fine balance is something that has an intention behind it. So I have to always think about that whole balance of wanting people to learn about a particular musician's music, to learn about a particular artist's work, but also to engage constructively and without bias. I think that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with Art and Jazz, is to create a more concentrated repertoire where people actually understand the artistry behind each and every iteration.
And even with all your work, like the library that you have, I was reading about that also, your social impact agency. This just appears to be a thing that's just driving your whole career as a curator.
Yeah.
Just this thing of having a positive impact on the world and elevating the people around you. Tell us more about the library.
So it's funny you say the library. I initially, when I started thinking about a name to have, you know, my social entrepreneurial initiative, was to call it The Library. And a lot of people always think, you know, it's a very funny twist of events why I came to the name Sematsatsa Library. Sematsatsa is the word that inscribes or describes a consummate individual who, obviously, I heard when I was young in my mother tongue. And so I combined these two words to create a narrative or a story. So Sematsatsa Library is really a play on words. It's me combining two words that I felt could go together. And the library is one of the spaces that I felt comfortable being in as a child. And growing up, I always felt comfortable reading and writing. And that's where I find comfort as an adult as well. So Sematsatsa Library is a social impact agency. We work with different creatives to bring about, like you said, a positive change in the world. But we specifically focus on youth and women. And I do the work through different exhibitions, projects, campaigns and writing at the core of it all. So this has been pushing my career for the longest time, over 10 years of work that I've put in, but also thinking about, you know, the next generation, how they have to manage and navigate the arts has always been our central motivation. And mentoring is a huge part of my work. Hopefully it will not end because I do enjoy mentoring young people, whether they're young artists wanting to get into the industry or even mentoring, you know, young people who are interested in pursuing different careers and trying to find a way out of their own sometimes not so pretty reality. So and writing becomes my vessel for actually talking about these issues. So yeah, I've done the work, and there's more work to be done as well.
Well, before we wrap up here, because we're almost out of time, you're mentioning Gabby Motuba, who was your singer in the last Iron Jazz event. And what you just said before, yes, about mentoring people on the bridge and using this organization as a bridge to tie everything we've discussed this hour up, she had put on social media about the Iron Jazz event, she put, and I quote, "The people. What is art if not a bridge to connect, to touch, to be touched back?" And I think that just sums up you. What is this all, everything that we've talked about this hour, what does it all mean? We've talked about what it means to everybody else. What does it all mean to you?
It means that we are elevating to our highest self. And for me, I would like to think that doing the work that I'm doing, I'm trying to elevate to my highest self. And I can only get better from here. And that's really what it's about for me, is to really elevate the quality of work that I do. And also by virtue of that, I can elevate myself personally.
We thank you very much for the work that you've been doing and for sharing your story and the stories that you've been telling with us on the One World Show. So we thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you, Richard. It's been wonderful having a conversation with you.
It's been wonderful indeed. If people want to find out more about Art and Jazz, or that's what she said, or any of the wonderful events and topics and organizations we brought up this hour, where can they turn to?
They can follow Art and Jazz on Instagram at artandjazz_CPT. And they can follow me at TYATYI, which is on Instagram too. So everything, you know, will be there. I often post a lot of the things that I get up to. And yeah, and if they want to get in contact with me, my email is Palesa, PALESA, at Sematsatsa Library, one word, which is SEMATSATSALIBRARY.Africa. Palesa@sematsatsalibrary.africa.
Well, Palesa Motsumi, we thank you very much for coming on the One World Show today. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Richard, and talk soon.
Thank you. You have been listening to the One World Community Radio Show on 88.7 FM, WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and Bush Radio, 89.5 FM, Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Welcome to our little experiment in freeform radio.
Do you know the day's light, waiting for you on the other side. Close your eyes and see the sun.
I just got a text asking me to approve a bank transfer I didn't make. I bet you get messages like this too. So much of our lives are online today, from email to banking and everything in between. To make sure my information was protected, I checked out CISA's Secure Our World website for simple steps to stay safe online. Now I know how to protect myself from scammers, and you can learn too. Go to CISA at cisa.gov/secureourworld.
Tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP Brookville LIU Post. 88.3.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRC.